and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Dan Kurtzky.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 573?
That's correct. We have been putting off talking about it for a while now because it has been nothing but a swath of rumors and potential offers and people declining. People like Josh Brolin have been mentioned, Chris Pine, Matthew McConaughey, Ewan McGregor. But now we have a casting, an official casting, it seems, for Hal Jordan in the first season of Lanterns from HBO in the new DCU from James Gunn and Peter Safran. And that is in the form of Kyle Chandler from The Wolf of Wall Street, Argo, Zero Dark Thirty. He's in the Monsterverse and so on and so forth.
Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights. I never watched it, but
neither did I. But that arguably that could be. That could be where most people know him from or would remember him from, besides the two MonsterVerse, legendary MonsterVerse movies he was in.
But yes, we have an official Hal Jordan, it seems. I believe, and I don't have it in front of me, but the report is that he is signed on for the first season of Lanterns, yes?
That is what I've heard as well.
Okay. Following this announcement, we've been hearing things about who could possibly be our Jon Stewart. But as of this recording, those are still rumors. But Hal Jordan has been cast, and it is Kyle Chandler, who is 59, right?
I believe that is correct. But on the bright side, it's not Josh Brolin. I thought that was a horrible match. I think it also depends on... See, this is... And we'll delve more into this in the second part of this analysis, that it also depends what they're going with Hal, personality-wise, because I don't see Josh Brolin as particularly likable. He never has come across that way in most of his projects. He kind of seems a little rough around the edges. So I think Kyle Chandler is more inherently likable, though obviously he's capable of being stern, too. So I think, but based on general thoughts about Kyle Chandler himself, I think he is a better option than Josh Brolin. I think he's probably a better option. Honestly, as much as I love Ewan McGregor, I don't see him as Hal Jordan. I really don't see McConaughey as Hal Jordan either. I know he can look it, but now he's certainly not a better choice than Chris Pine. Chris Pine was perfect. You know, he's Kirk, for God's sake. That is who Hal Jordan is. I mean, realistically speaking, he's probably never going to be Kirk again, because Star Trek IV has been in developmental hell for like almost a decade now. The odds are that movie's never going to be made. But Chris Pine would have been perfect depending on what they were going for. But I think Kyle Chandler, for what they are going for, I think Kyle Chandler's not a bad choice.
And what are they going for? Are we still... We're still being told it's essentially Lethal Weapon in space, right?
Yeah, we even knew before this that they wanted, that Hal was going to be older and John was going to be younger. Now, clearly we did not expect there to be, I mean, we didn't think that when they gave us that basic description that there was going to be this much of an age discrepancy, because now we're talking like a whole generation separating them. No matter how old canonically they make Hal in the show, like you mentioned, Kyle Chandler is pushing 60. So even though he doesn't really look it, so they can make Hal 50, I guess very easily they could say Hal is 50-ish instead of the 40-ish that you would have assumed he would have been if they wanted to cast a already been Green Lantern for a while, Hal Jordan, you would have naturally thought 40 would have been the age they would go for. But they're clearly they have a reason, which we don't know yet, why they're making him and Guy basically contemporaries of each other. But John Stewart's probably going to be like in his early 30s. So reading it, I mean, obviously we can read into that to say, hey, they're doing it so John can be the main Green Lantern in the DCU, which is, you know, depending on who your favorite Green Lantern is, that's either a good or a bad thing for you.
Well, I mean, it's a buddy cop show, isn't it? Like, this is the classic formula. You have the older seasoned veteran and his partner, the plucky young recruit that's got to learn everything on the go, and it's like a whole mentor mentee thing, and they balance each other out that way because they come from two different worlds, so to speak. Like, they approach things two different ways, you know.
Except that's flipped on its head though if it's Hal, right? Because Hal's, despite his age and being a veteran, he's still going to be fly by the seat of his pants, whereas we would have probably assumed John Stewart comes from a military background and just got recruited into the biggest organization in the universe.
Yeah, but there's still going to be a lot is made of the fact that the Green Lantern Corps is intergalactic military, but at the same time, I think it's a mistake to automatically assume that that means John will just click with it because Earth military is the same thing as flying in space and shooting aliens with lasers. Like, I think Hal can retain all of the classic traits that we know him to have and still be kind of the wise one of the pair because he's used to all the stuff that John is going to think is batshit insane, despite the fact that John is the more disciplined of the two who realistically should take to it easier because he of his Earth experience.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. And to see from a dynamic perspective, have to see how long Hal is supposed to have been Green Lantern. Now, is Hal going to have been Green Lantern in this universe since 2930, like he was supposed to basically in the comics? Did he get the ring around that's a little bit later and still had it for like only like 15 years as opposed to like 20 years? It's an interesting decision. First of all, just the fact that they're keeping Hal and Guy basically contemporaries of each other, but they're making sure that John is another generation.
I mean, what if, and this is like total speculation, but what if this is Hal being pulled out of retirement for some reason? Like, what if something happened 10 years ago to make Hal quit? And that would not be out of character because Hal Jordan has quit the Green Lantern Corps at least twice that I can think of off the top of my head in the comics. But now something has stirred and he needs to come back and he has to take this new partner with him, whether he likes it or not. Like, there's a million ways you can write around this age gap. You know,
I agree with that. I think what some people are concerned about is the fact that, because you talked about that about him being signed on for one season of the show.
Yeah.
What I, again, and we don't know if this is true because we hear lots of rumors about why people didn't take this role and other things. And we can talk about that if you want later, because you and I have chimed in on that thread today. The idea that supposedly Chandler's contract was just for one season, but there's no movie deal. So a lot of people are kind of concerned about that, what that actually means for the future of Hal Jordan in the DCU, whether he even makes it out of season one alive or he just disappears or something. And eventually, whether they parallax him or whether he just comes back down the road. But the fact that there's no but if that's true, which, of course, we don't know if it is. But if it's true, he is only contractually obligated to do one season of this show and there is no movie deal along with it. That doesn't, on the surface, that wouldn't seem to imply that Hal Jordan is going to have a particularly big role in the DCU and James Gunn's vision of it, if you will.
Yeah. Dan, what do you feel about that? Because I know you were talking a bit about kind of why everybody was railing against this online and you're not quite sure what it meant.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people talk about how, like, suddenly this makes them lose faith in this whole show. And I guess the fear is that casting an older actor means he can play Hal for less time, just because he's going to get old faster than they can make stuff with Hal in it. I don't know. I guess I come at this from a place where, like, I'm kind of over the big Comic-Con presentations where we put up the big slide that says, here is our 10-year plan to do all these movies and TV shows. And just to be clear, when they first started doing that stuff for Marvel Phase, like, 2 or 3 or whatever, that was exciting to me. Because in my mind, that meant they have this all planned out. They know what all those stories are. They know how everything's going to connect. We just have to wait for it to be unveiled to us. And what we know today is that when they put a big list of shows and movies up on a slide on a tentative timeline, they know what's going to be in, like, 3 of those at most, and they're making it up as they go along. So when I see something like, in my opinion, the one of the worst lessons Guns DC can take from the MCU is to mimic that model. And I kind of take it as a good sign that they're starting with one season and they're going to see how it goes. And if it's going good, then they can renegotiate a new contract and work on season 2. And if that's going good, then they can start talking about what are we going to do with these characters crossing over with movies. Like, build it one step at a time instead of trying to do all of it in advance when you're not even really doing all of it in advance. You just want it to seem like you're doing all of it in advance. So, like, I mean, I think I talked about it last time I was on here, like, in terms of Gunn's Superman movie, like, how one of my favorite aspects of that at this point is that I don't really have to think about it as anything other than just being a Superman movie. Like, yes, there will be sequels. Yes, that Superman will appear in all of these other projects all over the place. But for now, it's just a Superman movie, and all it has to do is be a good Superman movie, and it will be a success. And, like, I haven't seen anything that Kyle Chandler has been in. I'm looking at his picture right now, and he vaguely reminds me of the guy that played Martin Jordan in the Ryan Reynolds movie, so I guess that's good. But, yeah, I'm kind of content to just see what he does in one season of this show, which, you know, who knows if there's going to be more than one season. Like, superhero stuff dies on the vine all the time. Sometimes because the quality was low, sometimes for any number of internal reasons. But, yeah, I kind of want to see them take this slow and make decisions based on actual results instead of speculative bullshit.
Plus, all the shows. So, as far as we know, every show that's been greenlit for Phase 1, it's only one season. None of these shows have been guaranteed a second season, period. So that part isn't, I don't think that's the part, and I agree with you overall, but I don't think that's the part that concerns. Well, first of all, we have to see obviously who they cast for John, and then we also have to see, depending what, again, we won't know because, but what supposedly comes out about what his deal is. So if, let's say, his deal does include movies, then that will kind of make people, the people who haven't basically gotten to the ledge yet, or gotten on it yet, probably will move closer to it when it's like, okay, well, if they've given this guy a movie deal as long going along with his first season of the TV show, but they didn't do that for Kyle Chandler, then it makes sense why people would speculate more than it is. It's less speculation and there's more circumstantial evidence to support the idea that they're not planning on doing much with Hal. The funny thing was, and I said this to Chad, is that and it does ring true, since we kind of mentioned this a little bit with comparing, you know, John being having to be ascended with Kyle having to be special, that the Kyle fan that all of a sudden think that because they're aging Hal up, that means that Kyle's going to be the Green Lantern in the DCU, when there's absolutely, unless you can find James Gunn making, waxing poetic, some of his tweets about how much he loves Kyle or Kyle's his favorite Green Lantern, then there's absolutely no reason for him at all to think that, not that Kyle can't be around, but to think that Kyle's going to, I mean, they're clearly, all the evidence at this point makes it pretty straightforward that John's going to be the one they're going to be focusing in on.
I mean, if anything, they might be using Guy as the bridge character, because he's going to be showing up in at least one movie. He'll probably show up in more than one movie, and Nathan Fillion's like a pretty prolific TV actor, so like he can make that jump easily. Like, why not? You know, maybe he's the one that kind of goes between the two and links them, and then eventually pulls the other lanterns up into a movie.
That is true, but it's also interesting that some people have asked the question that if you were going to cast Hal Jordan to be older, or really old, not even older, old, then of course all the people have always said that, well, Nathan Fillion was perfect for Hal Jordan, then why didn't he just cast Nathan Fillion to be Hal Jordan and cast somebody else to be Guy, unless he's doing it just because he's going against type, or because he just thinks it would be, or Gunn just thinks because he's friends with Fillion, that Fillion would bring something to Guy that maybe would make him be something unique. I don't know.
Well, Nathan's a fan of GL, right?
I believe so. And he has done.
He's voiced him for a long time.
Yes, I was just going to say, he's done Hal Jordan's voice before. Yeah. So it's just, it's not an illegitimate question to say, because the argument against Nathan Fillion ever being Green Lantern is kind of like the basic argument against why doesn't make any sense to cast someone like Idris Elba to be James Bond, regardless of whether you wanted, if you were 100% okay with it, doesn't matter what race he is, that he just has to be an English male, at least sticking to that basic template, that a lot of people think, oh, Idris Elba would make a great James Bond, except he's like in his 50s. So that's go ahead.
You were saying a minute ago about Chris, you know, it makes sense that Chris Pine should be Hal Jordan because, you know, Hal Jordan is Captain Kirk. In the same way, it makes sense for Nathan Fillion to be Hal Jordan because Hal Jordan is Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
That's you're right. Yes. Yeah. You're right.
At the same time, though, I've seen Nathan Fillion play a lot of very, very smug, smarmy assholes. Even a smug, smarmy asshole superhero, if you've ever seen the Dr. Horrible Sing Along blog.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's like both things can be true at once. He can be capable of playing a good Hal Jordan, yet also possess the qualities that go into a really good Guy Gardner performance.
Well, let's talk about the actor then, because you self-admitted not seeing him in much. I posted over on Twitter when the announcement was made. I've seen him in Super 8. I've seen him in The Day the Earth Stood Still, the Keanu Reeves remake. And I've seen him in I later realized I've seen him in King Kong, the 2005 King Kong.
Oh, that's right. He was the actor.
Yeah, he was the actor. And then he's Dan, you've definitely seen King of the Monsters and Godzilla versus Kong, right?
Yeah, I just don't remember him at all.
So you'd recognize him more in King of the Monsters. He's the father of the girl.
Millie Bobby Brown.
He's the one who hates Godzilla and wants all the kaiju to die. And his ex-wife is the one who's taking his daughter and doing all that stuff. Remember, he's trying to get his daughter back. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at a picture. He's a lot younger here, or maybe it's just hair dye.
But here's the thing I recognize in Super 8, Day of the Earth Stood Still in the Monsters. And I'll just might as well read this part of the tweet where he basically plays the same character in all three of those, a borderline irredeemable hard ass who thinks he knows best. but I also recognize
that. So he plays Hal Jordan.
Well, that's what somebody else pointed out to me. But when I think of specifically Kyle Chandler's character in the MonsterVerse, what I mean by irredeemable is he was so against Godzilla and the kaiju, and I'm trying not to be on this tangent for too long, but he was so against Godzilla and the kaiju that he wanted them dead and all this stuff. And then he learned so many things, and his daughter was put at so much risk, and he grew to trust Monarch a bit more and a bit more and a bit more. And then he saw his ex-wife go off the deep end. And she ends up sacrificing herself to try and right her wrong. And he does all this only for him in Godzilla versus Kong to basically be an absentee father and not pay attention to his daughter at all. Which I don't know if that's the feel you got out of the MonsterVerse, Mark, but I don't like Kyle Chandler's character in the MonsterVerse, specifically how he evolved from one movie to the next, because he didn't. Which pissed me off. But he plays a similar type character in Super 8, because I just remember, like, when all the alien shit was going on, him pulling his son or daughter. It's been a while since I've seen Super 8 aside, just being like, he's also a cop, I think, in that movie. And he's very much like, I don't give a shit what's going on. You're going to listen to me and blah, blah, blah. There was like an emergency situation happening, but he always comes across as this gruff dude, this gruff asshole. And I was asking people online what else I should see him in. And besides devoting myself to an entire series like Friday Night Lights, and people were pointing to like Argo and Zero Dark Thirty and Wolf of Wall Street, which I haven't seen, but I imagine those are pretty big films as I recognize the name. Mark, I imagine you've seen those.
I have seen some of them. I don't remember much about them, but I did see The Wolf of Wall Street one time. I actually have never seen Zero Dark Thirty, but his catalog of work, you and I are probably about in the same boat as the number of different projects, not the same project necessarily,
yeah,
that we've seen him in. I think he's capable of doing the role.
He's won an Emmy, for the record, everybody listening. Apparently he's won an Emmy.
And I do think that he has the benefit, like I said, we don't know how they're going to write Hal, but Josh Brolin, it's funny, I was thinking about this before, and I'm like, I was thinking in my head, thinking out loud, and I said, James Brolin, and it's like, well, considering how old they're casting Josh, they could have just asked to see if his dad was available, but Brolin just doesn't come across as likable. And the reason why I mentioned the thing about why I mentioned the contract, if the contract isn't just for one season, has no movie deal built in, that could have been the reason why, because there's been a lot of innuendo about why people, some of the bigger names maybe that were attached to this, not that we ever know they were all offered this role, just because they were potentially up for it, or maybe they expressed interest and WB didn't necessarily want them. But some of the reason why this role might not have been as appealing is if there's a little more vagueness, less clarity about whether it's going to be a big part or not down the road, as opposed to, if it really is, well, all it's going to be is one year of a TV, like 8 episodes of a TV show, and that's all we know for now. And not even like a, well, wink, wink. Yeah, that's all it is. But we know, but trust me, we have bigger plans for you. If it was not something like that, where people actually knew that this was a meatier part, it might not have been worth some people their time to do it, especially since this thing, I think, is supposed to start shooting in January, it's coming up relatively soon. So
I wonder if that's like if how media role it is a selling point or not. Cause like with superhero stuff, mostly I guess Marvel movies and TV shows, like that has been in decline over the last few years, both in terms of quality and in terms of its kind of cultural footprint, like the general audience's love affair with the MCU is largely over. And if I'm an actor who may be considering working on one of these things, am I necessarily going to want to instantly commit to play this character for 10 years across God knows how many shows and movies, when I don't even know if this is going to be like something good that in like that I enjoy doing, that audiences like. Would the idea of like, oh, it's just one season of a show and then let's see what happens, would that be more appealing? Especially in this kind of climate that we have now, where it's not, like, it used to be everyone in Hollywood wanted to be in a Marvel movie, no matter what the movie was or what the role was, because Marvel was a license to print money, and it was a guaranteed way to help your star rise. That's not true anymore, and I wonder, you know, is that making actors be more careful about comic book movie roles?
It could be. It's a sword that can cut either way, because if you look at it recently, TV show, first of all, I think the potential damage to your career of doing a comic book TV show, for the most part, that just doesn't really land all that well. I don't think that's not as much of a risk probably as doing leading a comic book movie that turns into a disaster. But there's also the fact that there's been so much good comic book comic book TV shows over the last few years. I mean, you're going to make a strong case Marvel's had much greater success consistently with at least having like one really good show a year, compared to, if they're lucky, they've had one good movie a year. That, you know, for you have Loki, and you have, you know, and even something like Peacemaker and things like that. So I don't necessarily, I think it could cut both ways. I just don't, it just could be, I was thinking about it just as the idea that it could just make the role maybe less attractive, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe there was more of a commitment to it, and maybe, like you said, maybe people are, maybe they're not willing to. It's like, I want to see what this becomes and how it turns out before I commit long term, which of course is somewhat problematic, because if you do have a plan for this role, you don't want to recast it. I just think that, I think it's one of those things that could definitely go either way when it from a casting process. Like, is this a plus to commit? Is it not a plus to commit? Is it a detriment to trying to lock someone in? And it reminded me of how Marvel was having such a hard time casting Reed Richards. And part of it could be, I mean, some of the speculation was, besides the fact that they just didn't want to pony up maybe and pay the money to like Adam Driver to get him to do the part, is that we'll have to see the movie to know whether this rumor was true or not. But the rumor has been for a long time, and some of these things have already been kind of proven true, like with the female Silver Surfer, which was rumored. And then people thought, well, maybe that was going to be one of the things Marvel was going to clean up and fix. But we know they didn't. That one of the script is supposedly Sue Storm heavy. It's Reed's not really the main character in this movie, at least not the first movie. So that could have made the part less appealing to somebody right off the bat, either because they didn't want to commit to it, or it's like, oh, I'll do the role, but the role is it's not as much of a starring role as I would expect. So I'll do it, but you got to give me more money for it. So these things can have different effects on different people. So again, some of these things we're not going to know, but if it leaks out, again, if it leaks out, whoever they cast John, that he's got a movie deal as well as a TV deal, then that probably doesn't bode well for what Hal Jordan's role is going to be long term in the DC, or whether, even if it's, well, we'll bring him back down the road, but that's the problem with casting somebody who's almost 60. It's like, how far down the road can you kick the can?
Well, thinking about a little bit of what you said and a little bit of what Dan said in terms of not locking these people in for multi-year contracts, and based on the performance of superhero, the superhero genre / medium, I just, like, it all kind of feels like what we're talking about is a little bit like what DC did with the New 52 in terms of, you know, we're going to do this, and if it doesn't work, we're going to stop that series and start a new one. We're going to do that instead. We'll focus somewhere else. But that almost feels, from what I know about Hollywood, antithesis to how Hollywood operates, because why would you devote so much time and capital into a TV show and or film of that caliber and not try to make sure that you don't lose your lead later on by not signing them to something else, just in case your project is successful? Which then makes me think, what do we really know about these Hollywood contracts? Like, is there, could there theoretically be a stipulation in, say, Kyle Chandler's contract where he's like, yeah, sure, I'm locked into this one season, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. But we can say that if the, and I know they wouldn't base it on, like, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes scores or whatever, but if feedback and profit is above X percentage, then you are more likely to get me back. And then if it's below this X percentage, then I am cut free to go do other things. But I'm not 100% actually locked in as of signing this particular contract. Like, can a contract in Hollywood be that specific where it's conditional on certain successes or losses? Am I just thinking crazily here?
I don't think as far as extending a contract. I mean, it's not, it's almost like, I mean, in a way, it's almost kind of like an incentive based contract, like in sports. It's kind of like what you almost, I think I'm trying to make the equivalent of, but I think usually in deals like this, the studio usually has the option, that's what they usually do when they make a movie that they think is going to be successful, or they have hopes will be successful, that basically people are signed to contract, which gives them the studio the option to bring everybody back to do sequels. So this could always be an option, and there could be an option, or depending on his relationship with James Gunn and everybody else, Safran and everybody else, that it could be, doesn't even have to be necessarily an official contract, or you would think it would be more than a handshake deal, that there could be another clause in the contract that people don't know about, or a second contract that people don't know about that is related to, well, we have this option to use you in so many number of movies. And he would agree to that, kind of like Chris Evans' deal when he had the 10-year deal or the number of movies that Chris Evans had in his original Marvel contract. So it's whenever, you know, we're not privy to all the inner workings of these deals. So we can only rely on, especially if things come out in Hollywood Reporter and Deadline and Variety, which is, you know, those trades are much more reliable, that we may get an inkling down the road. But It is an interesting, because theoretically we don't know about any, we don't know what Nathan Fillion's contract is. We don't know what any of these, I don't think we know about any, I don't think we even have even heard about like the length of what Corin Sweet's contract for Superman or whatever. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know. And most of that stuff we don't know, theoretically, we don't know right now whether Tom Holland has ever signed a new contract with Sony Marvel to do more. We know we can take it to the bank, it's going to happen. And technically Marvel still has one more use out of them anyway, because they never used them in a Marvel movie since they did their second contract, the one they gave us in No Way Home, that they haven't used them in an official Marvel movie since. So they do have one more use out of him, but you know, it's going to happen, but we don't know if it has already happened. Like Hemsworth, we didn't know Hemsworth had signed a new deal to play Thor basically until they announced right before Comic-Con that they were going to do Thor 4.
Mark, you just gave me a waking nightmare of Tom Holland playing Kyle Rayner.
God, I couldn't.
He's a great Peter Parker, but yeah. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. I'd be like, I'll watch YouTube clips of the show, everybody. Thanks. But I mean, I think no matter what happens, if season one of Lanterns comes out and is a hit and does really well, everybody involved is going to be incentivized to come back and do it again and do more stuff, which will make the studios happy because they can continue to put out a product that people like consuming, and it'll make the actors happy because they'll have some leverage to negotiate better contracts for more money. So like, I don't know, like, I agree, like, Hollywood doesn't usually make sensible decisions, but I think some of it comes down to the fact that, you know, Warner Brothers tried to do a DC movie universe before, and it didn't work out. Some people will tell you it worked out amazingly, but they are wrong. It didn't work out. And, like, I think, I don't know, maybe I'm just giving James Gunn too much credit here, but like, I like to believe they picked him because he's somebody who knows what the hell he's doing, and they're kind of giving him more slack than they otherwise would have because of how poorly it went last time. But I don't know. We're gonna wait and see. I mean, when is this show supposed to come out? Because I know Superman is in like June or something of next year.
Did they tell us when it was supposed to air? I didn't think that they did.
What, Lanterns?
Yeah.
I thought fall of 2025.
That would make sense. That could be right. Maybe they did when they announced they officially greenlit it.
I mean, they haven't even started pressing record on any camera, so a date right now is moot at this point. But I thought fall of 2025.
That could work because of the fact that the only thing is that could make it tight because I thought I read that they were supposed to start. I know they wanted to start filming in January, but I'm trying to remember if it was January to June or January to. I'm trying to remember what the range was that they allowed for this. But yeah, so you would assume the earliest it would premiere would be the fall of 2025 or the beginning of 2026. Honestly, James Gunn is the main reason just to have hope in this. I should be more upset about this than I am at the moment because, you know, I've been waiting, and we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this when we come back. That we've been waiting so long to kind of have have this whole Green Lantern thing resurrected since the 2011 movie, and to see it's being resurrected the way it is with the focus of where it's seemingly going and where it's not going. It is kind of a little bitter pill if you're a Hal Jordan guy because you've been waiting for this, and then it's like, well, but James Gunn's the only thing that gives you hope about this because James Gunn he's a good writer and he has, and I trust his vision in things generally. So there has to be a reason why he's casting everybody older. We just don't know what it is yet, and maybe it's going to be maybe it'll work out.
I think it's time. I mean, like we've touched on it, we've talked about it a little bit. Some of us have danced around it. I think. For me personally, in my opinion, I think I want to talk a bit about the age thing, because part of me is struggling with this because I'm comparing it to people who, like, when we hear about a new series which Lantern the focus will be, you know, that one piece of the fandom that seeks out everybody else to tell them why they're wrong or why they're stupid for liking one Lantern over the other, and sort of drawing a parallel to, oh, that means we're not going to get enough Hal. It bothers me a little bit, but also you think about this and it's like, we're good friends with Myron and Phil over at, all three of us are good friends with Myron and Phil over at Blog and Podcast of OA. All three of us here, we know what Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern franchise, but Hal Jordan specifically, means to Myron. And it's more than just a fandom. He had issues as a child that he was struggling with. And Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern, you know, fandom that he had as a child gave him something to focus on to kind of fight through the stuff he went through as a kid. So Hal Jordan means something so extremely personal to him. And I'm just... I think at the end of the day, I don't think Kyle Chandler being confirmed is the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of confirming it was going to be an older person. I think the confirmation that Josh Brolin was indeed offered the role already told us everything we needed to know, because either they don't have a script and they just know exactly what they're kind of going for, the feel, or they do have a script which is telling him to go that way either way. So either way, it's locked in. And I, too, am worried about not seeing Hal Jordan in his prime. I can see, like, when we hear Myron say stuff on his show, because I listened to their most recent episode the other day, about, like, him really having no interest in seeing a Hal Jordan on screen that's a contemporary of Myron, because Myron's an older guy. And the Hal Jordan that he identifies with and is such a massive fan of is not the same age as Myron. So being upset about not getting to see that on screen, I totally agree with. But if I have no control over it, if I don't want to turn into what I hate in terms of, like, you know, this is probably the too extreme example, but like the Snyderverse fans who are going to riot until they get their way. I am upset about it. I would love to see Hal Jordan in his prime. But nobody said we couldn't get any flashbacks. Nobody said we couldn't get any prequels. And there is that stipulation that Safran and Gunn made at the beginning of this whole thing, is that everybody's going to play their character across the spectrum, whether that's in film or television or animation. They'll be the voice actor for that same character, so on and so forth. So there's so many more ways we could still see Hal. And if I let go of that and wanting to see a Hal in his prime and trusting the process that there could be other opportunities for me to see Hal at different points in his career, I am left with, what do I want to get out of a given project? And I think about the Superman movie and David Corn Sweat and everything. And I want hope out of a Superman movie. I know it's especially like given the documentary that's coming out. I want Christopher Reeve's Superman back. I want him smiling at the camera. I want him saving cats out of trees. There's this comic book that came out in 2020, Superman Man of Tomorrow. It was a digital first series. And issue 12 of that series tends to go quote unquote viral every now and then in the geek circles. You'll see it start trending. And these are the pages, if you've seen them, is it's a story where Superman takes over for Atlas for a day. And yes, that Atlas who holds the weight of the world on his shoulders. He literally goes to where Atlas is and he takes the weight of the world. Superman takes the weight of the world on his shoulders. You know, it's revealed later on Atlas went to go see his daughter Calypso to walk her down the aisle. But the Metropolis knows that Superman is on vacation or doing something else or whatever. So everybody comes out of the woodwork. But then, like, you see these panels of, you know, Black Canary saving a kid or Firestorm putting out a fire, and everybody's pitching in all around Metropolis. Even this little boy, no powers, no affiliation to any particular family or whatever, climbs a tree to literally get a cat out of a tree for somebody else. And every one of these little vignettes is something like, you know, when they thank them for doing their good deed, they say some version of, don't thank me, you know, thank Superman. Like, you know, without this, none of this is possible without somebody like him. He was always there for me. I will always be there for him. Like that sort of a thing. I want that feeling out of a Superman project. So what do I want out of Lanterns? What I want out of Lanterns, in hindsight, is 2020. But when we went to go see the 2011 movie, again, hindsight being 2020, opening up with a monologue explaining the backstory of the core and everything, probably was a clue about the potential quality of the movie we were about to watch. But I was so just, oh my God, there's a fucking Green Lantern movie. It just started in front of me in my eyes on a big screen. Holy shit. That I felt this swell of awe about hearing, you know, Sector 2A14 and being selected, and, it said one must be without fear. Then just hearing that voiceover and seeing the ring fly through the universe and all of that stuff, those moments where you got to see Oa in the core, I want to be in awe again. And if in order to tell a good Green Lantern story, we have to have an older Hal to do it. I am not as hard on this as Dan is, but I think I tend to agree with Dan that I care more about the core at the end of the day and the concept of the core and what they stand for than any one individual lantern, despite having my favorite human lanterns. And it bugs me, and I wish I could have seen, you know, the pieces of that Hal in his prime that we could have gotten, but I'm not ready to be so shut down by this news that I'm willing to give up that sense of awe that I expect out of a Lanterns project.
Yeah, and to that point, you know, I don't dislike Hal Jordan. I just like all of the characters. So as long as I get some good Hal Jordan and also good stuff from other Lantern characters, I'm going to be happy. Like, if what ends up happening is we get one good season of Lanterns, and that season contains however many episodes of a really good Hal Jordan story and performance, and that's all we ever get from the character, I will be satisfied. You know, like, I might regret that we didn't get more, but that's not going to diminish my enjoyment of what we did get. And, you know, I think Myron is perfectly valid in feeling the way he does, because, like, the character just means something to him that it doesn't to me, you know? And I really hope that he can find something to love in this when all's said and done. You know, it's funny, as Chaz, you were talking about, like how it's a shame that we don't get to see Hal in his prime if this is the way it's going to pan out. Like, I kind of agree with that. But at the same time, my mind went immediately to the fact that, you know, all due respect to the original creator and everything, but the best Alan Scott stories are from when the character is a lot older than this version of Hal. So it's at a certain point, it's not about the age of the character. It's about the quality of the writing. It's about the quality of the acting. It's about what they actually do on the screen once we're watching this show. And to that point, it's kind of funny that to me that this is even the main talking point. Like, because when you tell me that this TV show is going to be about Green Lantern Hal Jordan mentoring this younger recruit, Green Lantern John Stewart, as he enters the Corps, like, that's the comic. That is John Stewart's first appearance. Like, this, so far, the little bit we know about this show is the most comic accurate Green Lantern thing we've ever had in live action, and it hasn't even been filmed yet. And like, I know, like, the argument is like, well, you know, Hal and John weren't that far apart in years in the comic, but you know what? None of us know how old Hal Jordan is. Nobody does. Because DC has always been intentionally vague about character ages, to the point that I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who don't even realize how young Kyle Rayner is supposed to be compared to Hal, John, and Guy. You know, I always go back to it. I always point at it whenever I can. The end of Zero Hour, Green Lantern number Zero, has Kyle telling Hal that when he and his friends were running around as kids pretending to be superheroes, they all wanted to be Superman, but Kyle wanted to be Hal. That means Hal was already Green Lantern when Kyle was like 10 years old or something. But you would never know that based on how they're all portrayed as adults. Yeah, comic book ages are mostly bullshit, and at best, an impossible standard that adaptions shouldn't be held to unless it's animated.
I mostly agree with what you guys have said. I think the concern, generally speaking, is, and yes, if we can get a well-written, good representation of Hal to help erase the Ryan Reynolds problem, which, again, I'm not even going to blame the movie at this point. The problem is just Ryan Reynolds. He's the problem. The problem is he needs to shut the fuck up, and he just refused. I would be very interesting to do a do some psychoanalysis on Ryan Reynolds, why he just can't let that go. Because he's been so much more successful now than he was when he made a 2011 movie. So if you blame that 2011 movie for him not becoming a star then, he's a star now. He met his wife because of that project, but yet he just can't let it go.
So he didn't do it in Deadpool 3, right? He didn't do it in Deadpool
3? Well, no, just because there was no natural reference. There was no natural reason to do it, but...
There'll be a deleted scene. Just watch.
But again, we know he keeps, you know, get any chance he takes, he gets, he takes to take a shot at it. So that's probably the reason why it's taken us this long. And that's, I think, what other people are concerned with, because this is like our quote unquote, probably our last shot we're ever going to get at this in live action, if anytime soon, if ever, because if this project turns into another shit show, which I don't think it will, but you got Damon Lindelof involved. So that makes me nervous, among other people on this. Gunn being the overseer of a project like this gives me the only hope. Some of the people actually attached to this project creatively are a mixed bag for me. But the reality is, if we could get a really good representation of Hal Jordan, even if it's not what I would like, kind of like building up the core and everything else and seeing some of these other characters come into play more in the natural timeline and when the dominoes fall – if it's done well, I can live with it. I think it's just The concern is that you're straying so far off the path that you're potentially alienating a huge, let me back it up and not say huge, but a sizable portion of the fan base that will automatically now, or could automatically, come in more skeptical than they were originally because so many things are being done in such a weird fashion that you're making people go, I'm not sure about this, as when they should be pumped about it and be into it. So that's my only concern, is that I know you want a broader appeal than the fan, than the Green Lantern fan base, and you can, and you could theoretically balance it out. You could end up losing some, at least at the beginning, some of the natural interest and support from the Green Lantern fan base. But because if the show's really good and everybody just is fawning over the show, you can get people coming in to kind of offset that. And then maybe some of the Green Lantern fans will weaken and come back and say, okay, let me take a look. I was not going to check this out, or I don't like what I've heard, but I'll go give it a shot now. I just think it's an odd choice. And since we don't know what James Gunn is doing what he's doing, and once we know what the show's about more, maybe it'll make sense. So like what Dan said, the idea that maybe Hal, even if he's not officially retired, maybe he's kind of like literally like part-time. It's like, hey, in case of emergency, break glass and call me. But for the most part, I'm doing my thing. That, Until we know, I think it's more interesting that they just split up that they did make the difference in the age between Hal and Guy and John be as distinct. And if they're going to bring in other lanterns, I think Kyle's really low on the totem pole, because Kyle's been really low on the totem pole, period. It's much more likely to be Joe or Jessica from a bunch of reasons we all know. Besides the fact that Joe has kind of gotten a push in the books along with John, if they're going to bring in somebody else, plus, let's be honest, if they bring in Kyle, even if they cast somebody Hispanic to play Kyle, now you still have four guys. The odds are overwhelmingly, if they're going to have somebody partner up with John after he leaves Hal, it's probably going to be Joe or Jessica.
If we get a line of every time I think I'm out, they bring me back in. I swear to God. I think much like the fact that we didn't comment on the Josh Brolin stuff until we got any confirmed type things, I think it's fair for me to admit here now, I still have the potential to swing around to the other side if we start getting news where it becomes more and more clear that this is not just older Hal Jordan, but they're going to kill him or make him the villain in favor of propping up another lantern or something like that. I have the potential to swing back around to the other side and we'll go, well, look, you can do old Hal without shitting on who Hal Jordan is. If this just turns out to be the Beware My Power animated movie in live action, obviously I'm going to be pissed. But right now, that's all just as much of a rumor and a potential outcome people are speculating on as much as they did when the rumors were swirling about McConaughey or Pine or Brolin. So until something is confirmed, I'm not going to let myself be pushed into the team of because of a confirmed older Hal Jordan, I'm 100% out. But if it starts meaning what people becoming clear and more confirmed, as confirmed as it can actually get without seeing the thing on screen, that it people's fears are having some basis, then my opinion could change moving forward. But for now, I'm in, I'm tentative, I'm hopeful, I am I'm being a little trepidatious or whatever, but we shall see, I guess, is my current standing. And by the way, just so everybody's clear on why I brought Myron up earlier, he's just such a very specific example of somebody who is on that side of the fence right now that I 100% empathize with and can see his point of view, as opposed to some of the others who are making that I'm seeing online who are making very different and erratic and very strange leaps with the reaction to the news about the age.
As a rule, I do not believe any nerd on the internet who says they're not going to watch a comic book thing. They absolutely are going to watch a comic book thing, if only to be able to complain more.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I guess the best we can do, the best I am about this is I can be cautiously optimistic about this.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the way we all should be. But like you said, if it becomes more and more clear that, let's say, the worst fears that some of us have about, or what the worst fears about what some of these things could mean, starts looking like, well, yeah, that's kind of what they're doing. That, yeah, then my opinion might change too, and I'll be, but I'm still going to watch it, and I'm still hoping it's going to be a good show, because again, yes, the on this level, having the franchise be appreciated and broaden its appeal is more important, but it still will be a little bit of a bitter pill that we've waited like 13 plus years, 14 years by the time this comes out, to get another shot at live action Green Lantern with all the stuff that could be there, especially with Hal being at the forefront, and they've chosen to basically sweep Hal under the rug potentially.
Well, also, let's not pretend like this is going to be, like, if this is successful, this is absolutely not going to be the last time we see a live action Green Lantern thing with Hal Jordan in it. There will be other iterations after this James Gunniverse is over. And even within the James Gunn universe, the multiverse exists. I know that's a bad word now, but eventually it won't be anymore. And we could potentially have all sorts of stories with all sorts of actors playing all sorts of Hal Jordans. Like, we're not cutting off other avenues as much as people seem to think we are. Like, it's like anything can happen down the road. This is just what this TV show is doing.
As long as it's good, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. as long as it's good. Like, I'm like, you guys are kind of like, oh man, I hope it'll be all right. I think this is going to be fine. I haven't seen anything to make me think that this is going to be bad. Maybe if I remembered this guy in the Godzilla movies clearer, I would think poorly of it. I don't know. But like, yeah, I'm just glad they confirmed somebody's going to be playing a character in this TV show finally. I still remember waiting to get for confirmation of who was going to play Simon and Jessica when it was going to be their show. Like, this is like, we've come a long way and yet gone nowhere. So I'm just happy. I would just be happy to see this on the screen so we can actually know what it is we're talking about.
Sure.
Agreed.
All right. What's next?
So, Dan, what do you think of the Thunderbolts? Did you not watch the trailer?
You know what? I saw the poster. I forgot to watch the trailer.
Go watch the trailer. I have something else I can talk about while you watch the trailer.
Okay, I'll watch the trailer. Hang on.
That's your homework assignment. So Chad.
Yeah.
Last issue episode. I hate that confusion. Last episode, you were asking me about sales, which were not out yet. But now I have the sales for the books in question. So Green Lantern number 14. Dropped down to number 55, and it had been the first bump up because of Absolute Power had moved it up to 37. So it dropped from 37 to 55, and the final issue of War Journal was number 148. If my voice did the Peter Brady, it was number 148, and that dropped down from 142. So didn't exactly go out with a bang, but not surprisingly, the series was pretty bangless to begin with. So it is a little disappointing for Green Lantern. It'd be interesting to see what Green Lantern 15 is going to do.
I bet it goes up.
I think it might too. I think it might go up a little bit too. I think that was probably a better issue, but we'll have to see, because I guess the hope that Absolute Power was going to be a continual bump up for Green Lantern and keep it in the top 50 kind of like blew up already, even though it's not that far out of the top 50, but still it dropped. That's a, you know, dropping from 37 to 55 is pretty substantial. That's a bigger drop than the War Journal, but War Journal is kind of like in the West bumfuck of the sales charts anyway.
I'm going to be very curious to actually in advance of the series, I'd be very curious to see what Green Lantern Dark and what Absolute Power Green Lantern end up doing numbers wise, since they're both not really canonically connected to the current ongoings. Well, we don't necessarily know that, I guess, with absolute power.
I was just going to say that you said absolute power.
Yeah, absolute Green Lantern. It's a different universe. We don't necessarily know that it's not connected, I guess, still to the main universe. But technically speaking, it shouldn't. Definitely, at the very least, Green Lantern Dark shouldn't. So I'd be very curious to see how two different Green Lantern books not connected to the current ongoing canon perform with people.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. On twofold, it'll be interesting to see how high the number one issue ranks, like you said, to see how much of an interest right off the bat there is. And then, of course, the all-important, what is the issue number two sell? Because we know there's always a substantial drop-off from issue one to issue two. So the question is, do they premiere it in a decent spot? Do they make the top 100? Is the worst one like 109, so it's almost in the top 100, which of course wouldn't be great if the first issue is already out of the top 100, because it probably means that that's going to be a Walking Dead book, if you will, a title that's already falls into that category, unless it makes a dramatic U-turn. But it'll be curious, and how it opens up and how it holds. So that's one of the things.
Yeah, I think too, because there's no way to tell, but there's such a big audience in the comic book indie world for the creators on those two different projects that I'm wondering if there's any crossover there from the people who normally read nothing but indies, if they'd be curious to pick up a big two book just because they're following some of the bigger creators of the indie space. Like Al Ewing or Werther Delladera and things like that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. It's always interesting to see how creators, depending how big they are and how hot they are, how successful they are at bringing people in left and right, based on when they jump from book to book or from company to company. Yeah. So I just figured since you were asking about the sales, I meant to check the other day, but I said, let me check. Because I knew it was close, because I think the August update came out like around the 21st or the 22nd. So I figured they would be out this before we recorded this week. So War Journal was predictable, and probably Green Lantern was a little disappointing, because you thought maybe it was going to be able to maintain its sales a little stronger during the Absolute Power event. But it will be curious to see if issue 15 bounces back up or not, if it can crack the top 50 again.
I'm sorry, War Journal, you were talking issue 11 or issue 12?
12, the end.
Did it go up or down? I'm sorry. No,
it went down.
That's weird.
Because people didn't give a shit. I know.
I mean, that's true, but even still, there's typically...
There's more of an upswing.
Yeah.
Because people want to know what the status quo is. But it went from 142 down to 148.
That's not too big.
No. It still sucks because the book isn't selling, but there isn't a dramatic drop off. So that's probably why. But okay, I know you're ready, right, Dan?
Yes.
All right. Thoughts? Thanks for coming, Dan. I mean, thanks for playing.
I mean, it's weird that they're not even attempting to do the classic Thunderbolts thing. Which I don't even know if you could do that surprise in this media landscape. You know, the whole like here's a new team of superheroes, but actually they're villains. But you don't know that until like the middle of the movie or something. Like it just makes the concept of the Thunderbolts inherently less fun to me. But I do kind of like the idea of like, hey, let's pull a bunch of characters from across the MCU and make a team out of them, especially if they're gonna be this mishmash that doesn't really go well together. I really enjoyed Ghost in Ant-Man 2. I'm glad she's back. There's I don't know seeing things like how John Walker bounces off of these people like seems kind of fun to me. I like having Yelena around, but I don't know. At the same time, I'm there's enough, this feels to me like a movie where, if this is on, I'll watch it, but, it's not, getting me excited. when they're like, oh, hey, Bob, hi, Bob, and like, I think I saw somebody pick up like an S or something. Is that the Sentry?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know the Sentry was in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm. I the way I phrased it to Mark was, I said that Thunderbolts had so much undefined potential, undefined that as a non-Marvel expert I couldn't pinpoint, but as a comic book fan I knew was there but couldn't voice. So as much as that makes sense to any one person, like, I don't know what I expected out of Thunderbolts. I couldn't give a specific voice to that for you guys because I'm not as experienced in the Marvel universe as I am DC to be able to tell you what, you know, characters or what tone or the, you know, matching the writing styles of the particular run of A, B, C, or D. But I knew that there was some potential there just by using the name of Thunderbolts, and what I felt when I watched this trailer wasn't it.
Yeah, like, the problem is, like, that original run in the 90s was such lightning in a bottle that they could, just by design, they could never get back. And since then, the Thunderbolts has either been, oh, just another kind of Avengers team, or just another kind of Suicide Squad team, or just a kind of, like, this is where you put your villains forced to be heroes for some reason team. Like, it's, I don't know, it's less special now that it's been iterated on and been forced out of the original mold. But I mean, I think this has such Sunday afternoon movie vibes, like you turn on cable on the weekend when there's nothing to do. Thunderbolts started playing 20 minutes ago and you're like, I'll watch this. Like, that's the vibe I get from the trailer.
Yeah,
it was interesting just how they put the trailer together, since you got so many the majority of the movie all comes from like three or four scenes that they show you, and they show you a lot from scene, you know, and there's cutting, obviously, but there's a lot of stuff that, you know, all takes place in the same scene. So I thought that was an interesting approach, just like it was interesting giving us at least enough of a peek behind the curtain to know that on the surface, everybody's giving these characters the same assignment to go to the same place at the same time with the goal of them potentially probably killing each other. So hoping it turns into like a Suicide Squad thing. And obviously it doesn't. So what this means, as far as not just what the stupid asterisk in the title, what it means, but how, because I think they are going to give us some kind of twist on the Thunderbolts, as how we know they originally were introduced as the replacement for the Avengers and all the heroes that were taken off into the Heroes Reborn world. And just the revelation that they were all the Masters of Evil and Baron Zemo. That I think they are going to give us some kind of variation on. There's going to be a twist, even if the twist is simply because they don't realize that at the end, this team has been brought together to not just be like a companion team to help out the Avengers, but they're being, you know, purposely put together to do shitty things that they think they're doing for good. I think we're going to get some twist on that, but I can't say that. I thought the trailer was okay, but I don't like the team all that much. There's only some parts of the team that I like. So it didn't sell me on it anymore. I mean, Florence Pugh is great in anything. So she's going to be the best part of anything that they put her in. So I'm interested enough, but I don't know if this is going to be one of those projects that's going to be pumping people up. So if Captain America doesn't do great, then then I could definitely see Thunderbolt suffering more. So that's why this movie, I think, is greatly dependent on how people feel about the MCU coming out of Captain America 4. If that becomes like a hit, despite all the reasons why it shouldn't be, with all the production hell that movie's been in, if that movie does do well, then I think Thunderbolts gets a little bit of a boost. I think if it doesn't do well, I think Thunderbolts could really not do well, because there's not a mainstream character here to draw anybody in, with the exception possibly of Bucky. And I know, Yelena's still mostly, I mean, if you didn't watch friggin' Hawkeye, you haven't seen Yelena since friggin' the Black Widow movie in 2021. So I don't know.
Does this movie come out before or after Fantastic Four?
Before.
Okay, that feels like a mistake, because everybody seems to be really excited about Fantastic Four. So I feel like the smart move would be to release this movie after it to try and get that bump from renewed positivity. for the MCU.
And plus, I mean, I don't think they can, but because of the fact that this movie is done, and this movie's, and of course Fantastic Four is still shooting, but you'd be correct, just because if for no other reason, we know May is usually when they release their biggest movie. The one they have the highest hopes for, you know, the most locking in, this movie's going to do fine. They don't, yeah. May's not usually a gambling position. But so fans, so I mean, you can make a case, any one of these movies right now is a gamble because of all the different question marks or unknowns about them. But Fantastic Four would ideally probably have been the one they would have wanted to release in May, given the choice. But we'll see. I was kind of surprised they dropped the trailer. I mean, when they did, just because it seemed like they would have released it earlier, because they know. I mean, we know they showed some footage, probably most of this footage during Comic-Con, I suppose. So it kind of seems odd that they made us wait for a couple of months to do this. But that was it. All right, Dan. What do you got?
Well, before that, I don't know if you guys have talked about this yet, but I have to bring it up. They're doing a deluxe hardcover for Far Sector. They're, the thing that Chad and I have both wanted more than we want food is coming, and is a collection of all 12 issues plus the epilogue from DC Power, which reunited the whole creative team to cap off the whole thing. I can't wait. It's supposed to come out in February. Pre-order this thing. It's $50. Go through DCBS or something and get it for significantly less. Yes. Yay. Hooray, Far Sector. Okay. All right, so Mosaic Comics YouTube channel. So much is going on. I think the last time I was on, I said I would be posting 8 new videos this month. I did 11 instead because I can't help myself. So I'm all caught up on the new releases, just in time to fall behind again because my month-long coverage of Blackest Night starts on October 1st and ends on Halloween Day. So if you like Blackest Night or any of the John stuff, or just want a break from current Green Lantern craziness, go on over to Mosaic Comics, subscribe for at least October, because I'm covering way more comics than I reasonably should in just 7 videos. So that is Mosaic Comics on YouTube. Come on by. Come on down!
And Mark?
LanternCast.com. The email is LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.